Welcome to another episode of the Data Revolution podcast. Today, my guest is Dr. Emma Bryant, who's one of the world's leading experts on information warfare and propaganda. And I wanted to have a chat with her because, you know, data is information and there is a war going on. So welcome, Emma.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast with you, Kate.
And it's great that we're actually in the same time zone. I was cyber stalking you for ages, trying to work out when we might be able to do it. So it was really good to have you come down here to Australia.
Yes, and it's been really interesting learning about data and propaganda in the Australian context as well, which is all a little bit new to me. And I think before I came here, I imagined Down Under was this peaceful place with all the beautiful animals and so on, and couldn't possibly have similarities to problems I've experienced elsewhere. And unfortunately, these are problems we face in all parts of the world. So I'm seeing just how many of the parallels there are to, issues of radicalization and the role of data misuse and privacy problems that are, driving these kinds of disinformation campaigns down here as well.
So what are you seeing as the big threat that you're seeing nowadays?
Oh, crumbs. At the moment, I'm very focused on the United States, if I'm honest, because I think we all are. Yes. Unfortunately, as well, I think a lot of the politics flows from there to elsewhere, partly because of America's, longstanding economic dominance in the West, but also just because of deliberate political influence efforts. So since I moved to Australia, for example, I've written articles about how the US far right is trying to influence Aussie politics and, sending people like Tucker Carlson over here. Now, this is also connected to Russia's effort to influence, of course. But, I think one of the problems has been that, the United States has been on this authoritarian trajectory. And unfortunately, management of information, information warfare, the data side of propaganda operations has, gone to a whole new level in the last 10 years. So I've recently published a book with my co-editor, Vian Bakir, called The Routledge Handbook on the Influence Industry. And in that book, we sort of define this new infrastructure as comprising deliberate attempts to advance an actor's goal, be it for profit, political power, or influence, that's often involving coordinated interplays between the private sector, the state, and political actors operating as interconnected systems to employ information collection, so there's your data part of it, and analysis, such as data-driven profiling, for instance, of unsuspecting audiences, and using that, of course, to then distribute and deploy propaganda, deception, or other forms of information advantage to encourage behavior change. What we've seen is a transition to a whole new infrastructure of delivery around this kind of industry. And that is becoming more and more intricated in its fusion with the state. And I think that is exemplified in a very clear way through the relationship between Trump now and Elon Musk, and the role Elon Musk and his business interests played in both getting Trump back into power, but also now he's in power exploiting the destruction of the United States government and institution of techno-fascism, which we see arising. So I think the role of data in all of that is quite complex, of course. And I think, some of your listeners might find the book interesting. I've tried to write it for a...
We'll share a link to it in the show notes.
Okay, great. Yes. myself and my co-authors, there's a lot of contributors to the book who have specialization in this kind of area across the world. We've got, five continents represented in the book. So it's quite a an expansive study. I think people will find it quite accessible as well. So we tried to write not just for academics, but for a larger audience, because this is such an important subject for people to understand and start to get a grip on. We are no longer just at a point where we're distributing propaganda via the internet. I think people ha our understandings popularly of propaganda and disinformation is still quite latched onto what it used to be back in 2016, perhaps, like a distribution
Or even back
system.
in 1939,
Yes, even yes. But I mean, I
I
think some people, a lot
mean,
of people have more of an idea of like of sort of targeted advertising since the Great Hack came out, the role I was as senior researcher in, which exposed the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Now I think that sort of started people thinking and understanding the role of like Facebook and other digital platforms in gathering massive amounts of data on them and sort of helping all sorts of people, but marketers, but also political parties and so on, with targeting data, targeting using data. We have gone beyond that to a point where these kinds of, especially in the United States, this kind of surveillance platform economy is all around us. We are increasingly dependent upon it and unable to extract ourselves from it and operate as humans without it.
Well,
And
I can't leave Facebook because all my ancient relatives are on it, and it's the only way they communicate. And I don't want to be there, but if I want to stay in touch with them, absolutely, it's the right way to do it.
Well, you see that. I mean, I'm in obviously miles and miles away from where my home is. I'm British. And so, I have relatives in the UK who, want to communicate via WhatsApp, and that's obviously Facebook. Now,
See, they recently added AI to make it even more joyful.
indeed. So there's a lot of problems anyway. And it's very difficult to extract yourself. I do have sympathy with that. I try to minimize the number of apps on my phone and only download new things if I check their privacy first and make sure that I absolutely have to have it. Most stuff I try to just go through a private browser like Brave or DuckDuckGo and go through into a website and log in that way rather than downloading an app to my phone. So I have as minimal number of apps on my phone as possible.
I counted a win that I managed to get all of my most close family over onto Signal. So
Signal
that
is obviously the best if you can. Unfortunately, my father is very old and he really can't get to do new apps, so I've had to, use that for him. But unfortunately, the not everyone is able to sort of get to
was
know a new app. That's part of the problem, is I think a lot of these technologies are kind of exclusionary for all elderly people and people with disabilities. The not Signal particularly, but like the fact that a lot of services, for instance, are being now delivered only through Facebook, like community services that we used to have a little notice board in our communities, or we used to, do organized charity or collections or community events through, other through the local newspaper or your community notice board. It's now all Facebook.
because the local newspaper is dead because Facebook basically killed it.
Yeah, you just don't find out about things anymore unless you have Facebook. So it really makes people reliant on it. So I think, and that obviously means it's gathering so much data about all of us. They have more data than, governments do. And
I always like to tell people who go very virtuously, oh, I don't have Facebook. It's okay, they've got a profile on you anyway.
yes.
And they know who your family and friends are anyway.
Exactly.
That's
Other
funny.
people add data about you, and they can track you when you're not on the website even. So it's they have these kind of skeleton profiles for anybody, in the hopes that one day you'll come back in. Because you probably have been on there at some point.
Interesting question though. How do you think that we you were in the age of surveillance capitalism that is now hostage to various authoritarian regimes, shall we say, now? What is there a road out of this?
God, I am currently trying to grapple with that, honestly. With the United States elections having gone the way that they have, it's hard to imagine one for the United States anyway. And these companies, the ones that we are most dependent on, are in America and are part of its politics. And I find it hard to imagine that the government's going to change in 4 years, now that Trump has the degree of power to which he has and is able to, transform the education system. He's able to essentially demolish parts of government. They're planning on actually getting rid of the Department of Education and things like this. So,
I've actually read Project 2025.
yeah.
There's a lot of really scary stuff in it. I will put a link to that in the show notes too for those who have not read it yet.
Well, I also, yes, you should, because people should know about this, but I have also written an article that is coming out very soon in Index on Censorship about the threat to freedom of speech of what Trump is trying to do with Project 2025, and in particular academic freedom, because he's going after universities. He's planning on defunding all of the universities, and anybody who any university where they've had protests going on is going to lose all federal funding. And so what they're trying to do is essentially, universities are dependent on students coming in with loans. Now, the Department of Education actually oversees kind of loans and things like this. They give out federal funding to universities, and this is contingent on accreditation. And the accreditation, it takes place at a state level. So now he has kind of Republican Congress as well. They can try to change the legislation that governs this whole accreditation of universities system in order to encourage new accreditors that are going to have a particular ideological agenda. And without accreditation, universities can't get access to federal funds, which means student loans, which means all sorts of funding for research and so on. And a lot of universities are dependent on this kind of funding. Not all, it will affect some more than others, but he's also going after universities that have endowments and things like this. So places that are some of the most prestigious universities in America, like Harvard, for instance, they're planning on suing on the grounds of civil rights discrimination, things like this, a reinterpretation, if you like, of that legislation, to stop on the grounds that the protests that we've been seeing are an attack on people's civil rights.
Yeah, so we should make the point though that this is not Trump, because Trump literally doesn't have two ideas in his head, I don't believe. It's the Heritage Foundation and the
Yes.
right-wing Christian nationalists, so the
Yes.
new
Who got
apostolic
him into power, and this
Reformation.
is how he's obviously rewarding them. But it's also, the Republicans in Congress too, because he can't do this without them. So this is very much a partnership in order to, this is why they elected him, yeah, because he's agreed to do this basically for them. And the plan has been laid out, as you say, by the Heritage Foundation, which is of course supported by, the the Koch brothers and has been a long-standing conservative think tank, driving, really quite extreme conservative thought, especially today. I think people tended to think in the past that the Heritage Foundation was more moderate,
No.
and so some people didn't see this coming in in a
They
shocking
obviously never
way.
did then.
I mean, I find this quite amazing because, they were also involved with the Mercers who were behind Cambridge Analytica. So I'm finding this quite funny that that people didn't quite realize how bad Heritage Foundation was. But yeah, it's been a long-standing force trying to create what we are seeing today. And the plan to demolish the Department of Education is not Trump's. It is one that
It is
has,
theirs. They
been
have a long
a
held.
favorite of many Republicans for a long time.
But so one of the questions that leaps to my mind is, with that kind of authoritarian regime that is now in place in the US, with authoritarian regimes similarly sympathetic in states, people's data can be used against them in ways that people haven't yet imagined. If you're using, if you're a woman who's using a period tracker app and you want to cross a state border to get an abortion, they can work out you're going to do that and can bring
There
in
have
law.
been arrests already, I believe. Yes, absolutely. It's very scary. And there are also, so one of the things Trump wants to do is set up what he's called the American Academy, which is essentially going to be paid for by the money that he is going to sue out of the universities in endowments. So he's taking this money, fining, suing them all, and then going to set up what he's calling the American Academy, which sounds like an online platform for degrees and education and so forth, that will be, AI generated education.
So Trump
No.
University with AI.
No, yes, exactly. No professors needed. So this is
I'm
what I
sure the
talk about in
rest of
my
the world
article.
will view those degrees very favorably.
But the thing is, they're free. And one thing that America has had a problem with for years is the expensive education system. A lot of Americans get into a lot of debt doing degrees. And then the problem is that, they are going to make these student loans ridiculously difficult to for people to get because they're going to be private loans only and so forth, and no more forgiving of student loans, and at the same time create this like free system, and the courses are going to be recognized, accredited, and any government agency will recognize them, any government contractor will recognize them. So that's a heck of a lot of employers, right? So it's a really, I mean, it will be an attractive way for some people to easily get a de what will be recognized like it's a degree.
A
Yeah,
US
it's not a
degree.
but it will be an easy way to do this. And because it's like all these online platforms, right? They're going to be generating an awful lot of behavioral data, I would imagine, while they are doing these courses. I imagine that this also will be part of the benefits for the companies that are going to be the industry partners running this American academy. So this whole pseudo, educational indoctrination platform, I'm not going to call it an academy because it isn't, is essentially going to be, the mass education platform that people can take advantage of, which is going to give them some kind of like thing that is considered to be like a degree, within
I
the
think we can
system.
already see the trajectory for education with what Viktor Orban's done in Hungary.
It's got a lot of parallels to this, although his academy, his university is still populated by professors at least, but they are,
But you know, he's for those who don't know,
limited in
he's
what they
actually
can
pushed
say.
one university out of the country because they refused to stop teaching things that he didn't approve of. And he's then taken
EU.
over the other universities and made them align to his way of thinking.
Exactly,
So,
exactly. He's entirely changed the educational system, and this is a really good parallel, actually, except that Trump is doing it in this kind of data-driven way, yeah? Because actually, this online university platform thing, it doesn't even require a staff. You know, this is like, the perfect example of the kinds of downsizing and efficiency version of government that we're likely to see with Elon Musk.
Or as Cory Doctorow is wont to say, the enshittification.
Yes, indeed, indeed, exactly. And poor people who can't afford to actually have a proper education are going to end up with this, crappy version of it that's generated by AI. And, essentially this gets a stamp of approval because, you don't really need an educated workforce anymore when, you can win your elections with disinformation and populism, and you're trying to build an authoritarian state. You know, the actual, having people within your society who are thinking beings is not
You
the
don't want that. You don't want that. You don't want
priority.
anyone.
Exactly. So it's a horrifying direction we're going in with this, yeah. And I think this also will start, you'll see with universities that have also had, their endowments purged, they're, they're struggling now to get federal funds because they of the changes to the accreditation system. And they are now losing students because they have to actually pay people's salaries, and this American Academy is delivering them for free by AI. And so the universities are going to be also then driven to these kinds of AI generated systems and, cutbacks and cost effectiveness and ed tech that spies on you.
There's a
And
couple of universities in the US that I know of that are already fairly far down that path.
Indeed in Australia, yes, actually, I would say. So I think this is something that's happening already, but oh my God, have we not seen anything yet? And I'm worried about the future beyond just the American Academy,
One of my degrees is in tertiary education, and there was a lot of literature about the corporatization of higher education being essentially bad for it, and that was before AI came out. So you've got the corporatization of education, and now you've got AI sprinkled on top, which makes it just worse.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and the combination of that with the state as well. So, essentially policy is being made in order to enable this tech sector. Yeah. So the two are almost intertwined. Government is the tech sector and its interests. And so I think that is also a very dangerous dimension. The fact that you've got Elon Musk going into incredibly important diplomatic meetings as well, means that this is also going to be something that will shape the way that policy is being planned in other parts of the world. Yeah.
But I always do a bingo card for each year in January, where I write down my existential dreads, get them out of my head. And on my bingo card for 2025, I've got Elon Musk either loses his citizenship or goes to jail.
Oh, you think?
Because there's the inevitable bust up with Trump, because nobody as needy as him can be with Trump for too long.
I get that, and that obviously happened with Bannon too, in a sense, but Bannon isn't exactly working against Trump. And we
Oh,
also see, I don't think that that's likely to happen with Musk. I think he's too powerful and he has an alignment of interests with Trump, regardless of,
well,
interpersonal relations.
he has an alignment of interest with the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah. Yeah,
Um,
and Putin,
he,
I
he, his,
think.
he, his family, his parents have an alignment of interests with the Heritage Foundation. So, you
Yeah.
can't underestimate the fellow traveller effect.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, he may not, the relationship may change and his involvement may change, but I still think he's going to be a significant factor across this year, personally.
Even if he drops dead tomorrow, his organizations will continue working with the US government. So that's not going to change.
Oh no, he's going to be even more integrated. Once he's in Doge, this kind of department of government
Expenditure.
extraction, should we say? Extraction.
It's really interesting because one of the things that the Heritage Foundation has been busily doing is collecting lists of people who don't think properly in public sector roles. So they have lists of people that they want to take out in the first couple of months to
Yeah.
replace with loyalists. And it's really fascinating to me because as a historian of Nazi Germany,
Yeah.
it does really seem reminiscent of the first 2 years of the Nazi regime.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of people are actually just trying to get out, because they're scared. I think they are expecting mass arrests as well, not just that people will lose their jobs. So I think, anybody who has been a part of the effort to hold Donald Trump accountable for his crimes, anybody who has tried to fight for democracy over the last 4 years is
Anybody who's tried to help vaccines get out into the
probably
world.
exactly
Like I've been joking on
is
social
trying to get
media.
out.
Those people should be out of the country and in a non extradition jurisdiction for the
But
full.
then, where does that leave America if you take anybody who might be the resistance out again? I think this is part of the problem that we've seen as well with places, like Russia. You need, if dissidents all have to leave, you end up with a very difficult situation within the country where, there really is a very problematic resistance and not an effective resistance within the regime, because it just can't exist. And if this happens in the United States, it's going to make things much, much more problematic over the next sort of 5 to 10 years. We need that resistance to still exist and survive. It needs to adapt. We need to be more transnational, and people need to actually support Americans. And I know that's like a bit antithetical to what Australians and British people and Europeans particularly feel like they want to do. I think a lot of people look at America and think, oh my God, they're fucking messing it up for the world. And,
Well,
stupid
they are.
Americans. And, they are stupid Americans, some of them. But actually, the reality is that these things are more complicated than just stupid Americans messing it up for the world. Actually, we need to also recognize that people are being lied to, that this is systemic. This is about inequalities. This is about, the rise of a techno-fascist state that people can't necessarily see out of or control as it is absorbing their lives. And so
The
it
other
is
thing
complex.
is that fascism is an inherently fragile political way of being, and people don't realize that because it's all of the things that they do, like hiring cronies to do jobs that need expertise, and all of that stuff makes it an inherently fragile structure. But as we've seen with Russia, you can have an inherently fragile state exist for a very long time. And the thing that I keep telling people is Russia, whenever it falls apart really suddenly. But when you look back, you can see the signs. Like it happens overnight, like perestroika. Nobody saw that coming. But when you look back, you can see signs. So that's
Yeah,
how
but
it
the
works.
reality is, those people who were powerful in the prior administration, the prior state, remained powerful within the new state. Yeah, so you end up with people who were, part of the intelligence community being part of the next intelligence community, and the systems of the state of state power remain with certain parallels. Certain oligarchs might be replaced with new oligarchs, but actually a lot of them stayed the same. The powerful people stayed the same. And so, I think that is also a bit of a problem. It seems like it's a new infrastructure, but the reality is that these things, the corruption allows it to have a similar structure and systems. And if the corruption benefits people still, it will still continue. So I think, you might be right with America. It's, I think the problem is going to be the corruption, yeah, which is how a lot of this has been enabled in the first place.
Yeah, but it's about to be on steroids.
And when that benefits people, that means that the if they can manage it, if they can manage the corruption in a way that it's sustainable, then that's a system that is quite hard to actually do anything about.
But you've got really interesting examples like Russia, where the corruption is endemic, and to the level where their military wasn't maintained, even though millions had been put into it, so that when they invaded Ukraine, they didn't have the military forces that they thought they had. They didn't have the tires on the trucks because they hadn't been replaced. So, there are things.
The worry is that America is okay, so there's still been corruption, before this moment, but America is way more powerful and way more equipped than Russia, and is a very dangerous state to have rising as a fascist power. It has that infrastructure in a way that Russia doesn't, because it's been hollowed out over
This
many,
has been
many
hollowed
years.
out. Good point.
So
But
that is the worry, I think.
I think they're about to hollow out their military with their councils for checking if generals have the right ideology.
Yes, true. Yeah, I mean, they're even talking about removing all women as well. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But I mean, you're right. There will be things that they do that are counterproductive to their own interests because of their ideologies. But I don't think that necessarily is going to make this something that is easy to handle
Well,
nonetheless.
they're not going anywhere after 4 years. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. Unfortunately, that they are trying to create the conditions to stay in power. That's what's going to happen. So the worry is there will be a faux democracy. Yeah, the look of elections, but the reality is no longer a democracy.
Well, arguably, the Nazi regime could still be in power today if they had not been so obsessed with getting rid of Jews. Because apart from that, everybody kind of liked them.
Yeah, oh God, that's a complicated one.
I know, but just saying, like the thing that made them, they diverted power from their war against the Jews. If they had put all of those resources into the war, they probably have won.
Yeah,
Let's see.
maybe. I don't know.
One of those what ifs. One of those what ifs. But anyway.
Sorry, I didn't really prepare to talk about World War II, but yeah, let's leave that one. I think it's a bit complicated to go
Anyway,
into.
it's been a really interesting chat. Thank you so much, Emma. I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on the show. I really appreciate it. And if any of your listeners might want to check out my other work, I have a Patreon. If I appreciate any support for that, is very cheap to sign up for the lowest level, only $3 a month for that. And I have a website as well where you can sign up for my newsletter, which is free. And there's a lot of resources also in the Patreon that are free too. So for instance, there's a glossary on propaganda and a propaganda bibliography as well. So I try to add free resources for people there too, if it's helpful to them.
Yeah, we'll put links to all of those in the show notes. Emma
Great.
has some amazing resources. I'm often looking in there, so it's all good, and there's a lot of good free stuff, but worth subscribing to her Patreon. Thanks for
Thanks
joining me, Emma. Bye.
a lot, Kate. Bye, everyone.
And that is it for another episode of the Data Revolution podcast. I'm Kate Crothers. Thank you so much for listening. Please don't forget to give the show a nice review and a like on your podcast app of choice. See you next time.